I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
Oh, I win. Google me.
We're not hosting an intergalactic kegger down here.
Props to the University of Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
They, first of all, they had a good day with the transfer portal getting John Mateer as their quarterback for next year. But they have a bowl game. I do believe it's today. It is called the Armed Forces Bowl. Right here at Amon G. Carter Stadium in Fort Worth. It's going to be at 11 o'clock this morning against Navy on ESPN. Well, Oklahoma is playing this game, Bobby Belt, with 30% of its team in the portal.
Significant.
Significant. It's even more significant when you factor in that Marshall decided they were not going to play in their bowl game when they had their similar exodus of talent when their coach left.
How much money are you missing when you skip out on a bowl game? Like, how much is Oklahoma making by being in this bowl game?
I can find out. Let me find out.
Because I'd imagine that's going to factor into it as well, which is surprising that, like, did Marshall have a lot of money to potentially gain and they passed on it?
Let's see. It's not a lot. It's not not getting a ton of cash. It's not like the college playoff where you're getting
$4
million.
Right.
But yeah, you're getting a travel subsidy and you're getting decent amount. Let's see. I think they have it here. Armed Forces Bowl.
$1.3 million was the 2022 Armed Forces Bowl payout.
All right, this is 1.35.
Okay.
All right, 1.35 million. That's the payout. So like, it's not a lot of money. That's not game changing.
No.
To these schools. It's game changing to Marshall.
Sure, which is surprising why they wouldn't just say we'll roll
and
out.
That's
there
why
and do
I
it.
Think Marshall should have a 2-year bowl ban.
Come
it's,
on,
it's a joke. It's a joke. Like play your. You have 100 kids on this roster. You have 100 people on this roster, and you lose 25 of them or 30 of them. You those kids don't want to get some run.
Yeah,
get
but if you're run, talking man. About you lose significant contributors. That's that when you're a program like Marshall, it's not like at Oklahoma. I would imagine you still have plenty of 4 stars.
You probably
behind
do,
that.
But I'm sure that those 2 stars at Marshall would love to play.
I'm sure they would, but I mean, if you're just talking about getting waxed and embarrassed, then
I'm right, you're wrong.
And I don't know, did Mike Green there, so he had following the championship game, Mike Green, their edge rusher, had declared for the draft, and so I can't imagine that he was going to play. He was one of their better players. He had 17 sacks
at
this
Marshall?
Season. Yeah. So I mean, I get it, I understand, but good for Oklahoma. I didn't realize their bowl game was today. You know why? Because I only care about relevant bowl games. Like, just kidding. The Armed
That's
Forces,
right.
The Armed Forces Bowl is relevant. I appreciate it. I think they're actually really good people that run that over there because I've been over to it a couple times. But I'm just saying, CFP.
So, I agree.
Step
I mean,
your
rest,
game up, Oklahoma.
I haven't paid attention to the to any of the bowl games, and I will not bet on them. I did bet on the Florida game against Tulane, but that was we knew.
Why do they even have that on the board? In a lot of instances, Vegas, some of these bowl games where there's so many people missing.
I mean, they have preseason NFL games. They have preseason NBA.
It's true.
Right?
I'm surprised that I'm just surprised they'd be willing to take on, potential risk of just not knowing who's going out there, what it's going to look like.
They have so much intel. OU gets their swag bag, retro dunks, Nike sweatsuit, Mamba hoodie. That's the swag bag for this. They have these Normatec recovery boots. They're about $700 each. And they get a sword.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Good for them.
That's pretty cool. So I love looking at the bowl game gift bags. So like the Las Vegas Bowl, you're getting like the Vegas Bowl is giving you Oakley sunglasses, scented candles, and branded beanies.
Oh, you love the candles. You love a good candle review.
I do. If you go to the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl, you get a Fossil watch and a new era cap. And Oakley Works backpack and a $500 MasterCard gift card to be playing in the Cotton Bowl, along with a Mercury duffel bag, an autographed football. I mean, you got Sony's on the, Sony extra bass noise-canceling headphones if you're in the Foster's Farm Bowl. It says, like, you're giving, like, bitcoins out to people in these games. it's kind of cool. So I always like to look at that. and see what they're giving out for some of these bowl games. Another head coach has said, I've had enough.
This is this is not college football kegger, but this is college kegger.
This is college kegger. This is Jim Larrañaga, who is the head coach of Miami basketball, saying, I am done.
I loved the game and I loved the university that much. I felt like, okay, there's one thing you got to constantly ask yourself. Are you going to give everything you have the commitment that it deserves? 100% of yourself, physically, mentally, emotionally. But I'm exhausted. I've tried every which way to keep this going. And I know I'm going to be asked a lot of questions, but I want to answer them before I'm even asked. What shocked me beyond belief was after we made it to the Final Four just 18 months ago, the very first time I met with the players, eight of them decided they were going to put their name in the portal and leave. I said, don't you like it yet? No, I love it. I love Miami. It's great. But the opportunity to make money someplace else created a situation that you have to begin to ask yourself as a coach, what is this all about? And the answer is it's become professional.
And that's what it is. That's what it is. And like, you either embrace it or you don't. Like, that's what the reality is for a lot of these coaches who, and college coaches generally are like, you know, they're not coaching professionally because they don't want to deal with the money.
Right.
They don't want to deal with that. So, I mean, I have no problem with Jim. Like, I'd rather him just quit than complain about it.
Yeah, but I understand the feeling of like, I need to explain myself and I need to talk about why I'm walking away and how that matters to him. Because I think it is important to contribute and to answer for like, okay, why are you walking away? Well, you know, why are you leaving? And to lay that out there for this reminds me so much of, I know we've obviously got the Saban comparison because Saban walking away and just being like, as soon as I got into my meetings, people are talking about transfer portal and getting more NIL money and different things like that. This reminds me more of what we had seen a couple months ago where Southern Miss's at the time head football coach Will Hall had talked to Ross Dellinger and complained about being a farm system. That he's like, we develop these players just to have them snatched from underneath us, and so much of my job hasn't even become about football anymore. My job is fundraising and going to boosters and trying to pitch them on, hey, this is where we need the money because this player needs it here. We're going to lose this guy. We got to do this. And that's a real factor that exists in basketball. It exists in the football realm, obviously, just in college athletics in general. The struggle of what the NIL era means. And I continue to say, I said it last week with Sean while you were out, this is still ultimately the fault of the NCAA. They dug in for so long against what was an obviously fast coming storm, and they just tried to dig in and stop it legally, and when they got told no, it just opened it up and it was the Wild West. And they had an opportunity, if they would have just seen what was coming and said, we're gonna build NIL up to look like the way we want it, and we're gonna do it from a position of power where we're giving them something, and then there won't be this need for legislation or for, you know, taking this to the courts. There won't need to be anything litigious about this. We can just say, all right, We're giving you this. We're being a benevolent leader and handing this to you, and you could have built this up to look like the way you wanted it to. Now you have no say, and now you get the mess that is the NIL era.
Yeah,
and but I love it because they deserve it.
Yeah, but the problem is that, you know, now they're gonna have to figure something out in terms of, because the last thing a coach should be doing in the middle of the season is recruiting his own players 100% in the middle of the year.
But it is the fault of the NCAA.
It is the fault of the NCAA, and they're going to have to come up with they're going to have to unionize this thing. The only way out of that is to unionize this thing, and you have contracts.
I mean, look, the reality is the last of amateur athletes exist in middle school.
Well, high school, I guess.
I mean, not really. Doesn't feel like it in a lot of ways. I mean, individually, yes, there are a lot of high school athletics has definitely been overrun with under the table work.
Oh, I mean, look, I mean, in when I was a kid, the private schools, I went to high school in New Jersey, the private schools were like better athletic programs than the public schools. And here's the reverse, right? The
oh, yeah, it's definitely different.
And, but up there, because the private schools could recruit, and they would just recruit you, mm-hmm. and they would give you scholarship money or whatever. So, like, all the good basketball players played at private schools, and all the good football players played at private schools. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
All, and that's how it worked. And because the high school players there had more say-so in where they were going than college athletes did. It was crazy. And that's what the NCAA is now, and I don't blame Jim Larrañaga. Like, if you're not going to embrace it, then just get out. Do what you know.
Which he is.
Which he is, and I don't fault him for that.
But this is also why so many people think Belichick will succeed at North Carolina. Is because Belichick looks at it now and goes, well, this is the NFL. This is professional. Mm-hmm. This is no longer amateur.
Yeah,
I can
but at least
this.
He had contracts at the NFL. They don't have contracts here.
Right, but
you
if
can
he
have
could,
a player not happy with their performance, their playing time in one game, and just say in the middle of the game, I'm leaving, I'm entering the portal.
Oh, yeah. I still don't think he's going to have success. Or I think he's going to have no more success than Bill Walsh did going back to Stanford.
Yeah.
But still.
The Pac-12 has filed a trademark for every pack between 8 and 14. Pac-8, Pac-9, Pac-10.
What are we doing?
They are preparing.
What about 2-pack?
There you go. They are preparing. What about 6?
2-pack, actually.
And what about 6-pack?
That's good, too.
Yeah.
They probably can't trademark that, though.
Probably
not. I would imagine.
But they are preparing to get a bunch of teams in and potentially regain their status as a Power 5 team. So they have Washington State and Oregon State. At the end of September, it pillaged the Mountain West for Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, Utah State, San Diego State, and Gonzaga that'll officially be welcomed in 2026. And that means they will meet the 8-school threshold that the NCAA requires to be a conference. Now, it's going to need to recruit another school for football because Gonzaga does not have a football program.
Start one from scratch. It's no problem.
Do it. Do it. Now, what they're saying is they might also be called just the Pacific Athletic Conference, the PAC. It's called the PAC Conference, but the Pacific Athletic Conference, the PAC. Right? It could be that. Or they could just go with the number system. Which it did start as the Pac-8
mm-hmm.
years ago.
Yep,
and then they added the Arizona schools, so it was the Pac-8 back in like Bill Walton's day.
Yep,
and then it became the Pac-10, Pac-12. So the Pac has, they're trying to get more.
That's fine. I'm not romantic about the what used to be Pac-8, Pac-12. It's not anything where it's like, oh, I lament that this is gone now. If it comes back, fine. I don't necessarily care about a conference that used to finish their games at 2 o'clock in the morning. So.
I like their logo.
It's cool.
The pack. I think it's one of the.
And they've got.
Logos.
They've had a story. You know, really historically significant teams within the Pac-12. But it's just I don't care so much about the conference itself. I care that the Big 12 is dead, essentially,
right?
Or is not what it once was. And the Big 12 is still relatively new. That's what, 30 years old.
96.
Yeah, so almost 30 years old. I care more about that.
I think it was formed in 94, maybe, but the first one. James Brown, right? James Brown of Texas won that game.
I feel good.
Yep, there you go. All right, that is a little college football kegger here on 105 Through the Fan. It's Sean and RJ. I'm RJ Choppy. He is Bobby Belt. K&C Masterpiece today. Buffalo Wild Wings in Fort Worth. 629 Staten Street, just off 7th by Montgomery Plaza, from 10 to 2. You and I will make an appearance out there.
I will head straight over after I'm done. Here on the air. Hopefully my voice is still there because I can feel over the course
good,
of this
get
hour.
Everybody's sick.
It's going, dude.
Yeah.
This is the same thing happened last year. I lost my voice right at the end of the year.
Mm.
And so no, but I will be out there and saying what's up to everybody. Would you prefer I mask up? Is that what you're telling
me? Mask up. I'll be there later. I got a funeral to go to, and then I will head out there after
condolences.
That is over. Yeah. So I will be doing that. But we'll both be out there, 629 Staten Street, just by Montgomery Plaza in Fort Worth. Can you afford these Cowboys contracts and the junk drawer? It's the commercial-free expressway next on The Fan. Good morning, DFW. It is Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan. Get to the junk drawer in about 20 minutes. You have made it to the commercial-free expressway here on Sean and RJ on The Fan. I'm RJ Choppy, Bobby Belt next to me.
Got you down.
Peyton and Caitlin alongside. And let's get you a little Cowboys update. Can we afford these contracts, Bobby Belt?
Yeah, if the Cowboys budget continues to tighten, which is something that Stephen Jones has insinuated at best, has announced at worst, I guess, depending on how you view it. But if they are going to continue to tighten their budget, who can you afford? Because you have several free agents that you're facing and several different players that you're trying to figure out, all right, can I keep this guy under contract, or can I afford to pay this? Or should I just look at it and say, you know what? I've got to figure out a cheaper alternative for this. And I've got to figure out another way to approach this. And so we're going to take a look at some of the big free agents that the Cowboys have coming up here and see if you can afford them. Because Brian recently said this, and I've talked about this. Brian was talking about specifically on Love of the Star, which we'll record later today at 12:30. Brian was talking on Love of the Star about Chauncey Golston and said something to the effect of, I'm tired of doing the heavy lifting of developing players for somebody else. I'm sick of it. I don't want to develop players so that they go somewhere else and have success. And it is. It's frustrating when you invest 4 or 5 years in somebody.
Yeah.
You patiently help them grow, bring them along, and then you pass on re-signing them when they finally mature and they're ready to contribute at a meaningful level. And I'm worried that we could be looking at that as a reality for Rico Dowdle, Chauncey Golston, yeah, Osa Odighizuwa. And it would feel like just a colossal waste of time if you were to let them walk right now. But you also might be looking at, hey, things are so tight and you're trying to cut corners and trim your budget to the point that these prices are too high. So what do you do, especially when these guys are playing well? So let's take a look first off at Rico Dowdle.
Okay.
Chop, I'm going to give you this contract, and let's just assume this is what it costs you. It's 3 years, it's $18 million, and it's $14 million guaranteed, which means you're basically, it's a two-year contract, essentially, for $6 million a year.
No.
3 years, $18 million is the same contract the Lions gave David Montgomery.
Couple off seasons ago, yep.
Yep. That came with just $8 million guaranteed, I think.
Yes. Now, we have entered a new era of paying running backs again. It's not up to the level that it was when you're giving Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott $15 million. But just this offseason, and I know, different discussion, but just this offseason, you got Saquon Barkley gets 3 years at $12 million annually, $12.5 million annually. You get Josh Jacobs got 4 years at $12 million annually. DeAndre Swift, 3 years, $8 million annually. Derrick Henry, 2 for $8 million. Tony Pollard, who a lot of people thought was washed here, 3 for $7 million annually. The guy that I look at and I zero in on, Zach Moss, who was not a productive...
Randy's brother.
Yep, that's the one. Yeah. Zach Moss, who was not a productive running back, was 27 years old entering this offseason, had a lengthy injury history, got 2 years for $8 million. Not annually, but 2 years for $8 million, so it's $4 million. I think it's very reasonable to look at Zach Moss's deal and say, we're worth a couple million more than that. And with the cap inflation, give us a third year. Doesn't have to be guaranteed, but go ahead and give us a third year. And so essentially it's a two-year deal at $6 million a year. Would you rather just go find somebody else, or are you saying Rico Dowdle's shown enough in the last 6 weeks that I'll pay it?
I would rather do anything than pay a running back a second contract.
But what is let's look at it reasonably from the idea of just what is a second contract with Rico Dowdle. Rico Dowdle for his career, Chop, has, what is this, 339 touches in 5 years.
That's basically a year for Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I mean less than a year for a lot of times for Derrick Henry. Is that not something that you look at and go, tread is not nearly worn off those tires the way other running backs are? Or do you say, is 27 about wear and tear, or is 27 about that's just when guys start slipping at that position?
I don't know. It's chicken and egg, right?
Yeah. Dowdle might be an interesting test case for it. Who, by the way, Dowdle is 97 yards away from 1,000.
Let me ask you this. You could sign Rico to that deal, or you just draft Ashton Jeanty in the first round?
They are picking 17th right now. Let's see what that money is.
I don't know that he'll be there.
Just assume, let's say, maybe he gets there.
Maybe he's there. Let's see.
Or whatever it would be. So if you were to look at just last year, the NFL draft slot amount at 17, for instance, where they're currently picking, that was Dallas Turner. Doesn't have the number there. I think that what you're looking at is, here, Detroit Free Press had this last year. So this was just 2024. If you're looking at number, let's say you have to trade up to 12. You want to say, where, regardless where you are, you trade up to 12 to go get him. If you go pick him at number 12, that is an $18 million contract over 4 years. Would you rather do that? Just say, I'll pay $4.5 million a year for 4 years?
Yeah.
For Genty, who's not proven, but you anticipate will be really good.
Yeah, I would rather do that. So, yeah, you're getting... Right, I would do that.
Okay.
And at 17, it's $16 million. Dallas Turner was 15.8.
Okay, and so if you can get him there, great. Otherwise, you may have to trade up. So you're talking about sacrificing maybe a third or a fourth to go up there. And then...
I mean, it's, we've given up fourths for less.
That's true. That is.
So I don't care about that. And I don't like a running back in the first round, but I think when you're a team that is, when you're trying to build a team, I wouldn't do it. But if you're a win now team, I'd rather do that than sign a guy to a second contract.
I don't. I'm with you. I don't disagree that Ashton Genty, I think, is worth it given where this team is. I wonder if you're rolling too much of the dice. I like Dowdle. I think Dowdle's good. Obviously, you're just factoring in the injury history. But you're saying you're going to go ahead and pass on 3 years for 18.
Yes.
Okay. We're passing on 3 years for $18 million. Osa Odighizuwa. Now, when you look at what it has cost to sign big-time defensive tackles, big-time pass-rushing three-technique defensive tackles, look at in recent years, you have Sheldon Rankins, went for 2 years, $24.5 million. That's 12.25. DJ Reader went to Detroit for 2 years, $11 million annually. These were older players, too. They're in their 30s. Grover Stewart was re-signed in Indianapolis for 3 years, $39 million. Dorrance Armstrong left here and got 3 years for essentially $11 million a year. He's an edge rusher, though.
Right.
I'm going to say that's what we're throwing at Osa. So 3 years, $33 million, $25 million guaranteed. Are you in or out on that deal for Osa Odighizuwa?
I could be in on that. They can't lose any more depth on the defense.
No, because that was the problem last year. They got ravaged in their depth, and that's one of the things that really hurt them early on.
Yeah, they can't lose any more depth, man. They just can't do it. Their defense is going to be really cooked if they don't.
So you're saying you would pay that? $11 million annually. You're locking in at $25 million guaranteed for the next 3 years.
I assume they're going to lose Tank.
Lose or more just release.
Walk away
but
from.
Yeah. By the way, Osa Odighizuwa, no defensive tackle has more quarterback hits than him since week 8. The only player in the NFL who has more hits, quarterback hits than him since week 8 is Myles Garrett, has one more.
Yeah, pressure from the middle is big if you can get it,
and he's quick.
Yep, I don't want a run stopping tackle.
So
that's a waste of money.
We're paying Osa Odighizuwa then, 3 years, $33 million.
Let's do it.
Okay, we're putting that on the books then, and resetting it running back. Okay, so we're evaluating here.
Real quick, I went and looked at the best defensive players. This is going into the year at defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's interior defenders. Chris Jones, Kansas City. Dexter Lawrence, the Giants. Quinnen Williams, the Jets. Derrick Brown, Carolina. Cam Hayward, Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
DeForest Buckner, Colts. Hargrave, San Fran. Simmons, Titans. Jalen Carter, Philly. Christian Wilkins, Raiders. I mean, you've got seven teams that stink in there, and they've got 10 of the best defensive tackles, interior defenders in the game. That's kind of the point, right?
Yeah, but if we're just talking about, and he definitely contributes in a big way, I think. And the way that the Giants game was a great example of that. I don't think he got a single quarterback hit in the Giants game. Osa didn't, but he was consistently double teamed and opened things up to where you were able to generate more consistent pressure. So I think it's at least worth looking at, but we're going to go ahead and we're going to add Osa then to the books for next year, and then we'll see how that kind of impacts things as we move forward. But we're taking a look at Cowboys contracts here, what it might cost to bring them back, and if you'd be willing to pay it. Chauncey Golston, who is largely a run stopper, He is a poor man's DeMarcus Lawrence, and that sounds offensive, but he's a good player. He's a really good player. He's not going to give you a ton pass rush-wise. You've already got Marshawn Nealand behind him, who you hope will kind of fill that role, but he's a solid defensive line rotation guy. Looking at the market from the last couple of years and what he's given you this year, 2 years, $10 million total, $5 million annually, and that's seven guaranteed. So you're in it for those 2 years. Are you sticking with Chauncey Golston, or are you saying, nope, I can move on and find somebody else to do that? Or I'll ask Nealand to step up.
You got to ask Nealand.
Okay, so you're just saying, cross that off, I don't need that. And yep. we'll get to the end of this, and when you've made all your decisions, you may say, all right, I've only kept one of these. I feel like I can afford another. Right. So, all right, next one. Kevontae Turpin.
Yeah.
Who has been a valuable asset for you in the return game and has shown recently that he can be a valuable asset as a receiver as well. I think what you're looking at there is he's an exclusive rights free agent, which means
you can match.
They've got all the control here. He's a restricted free agent. Exclusive rights free agent is Brock Hoffman. That's the one that's all the control. What they can do is they can put a tender on him, either right of first refusal, which costs like $3.5 million, a second round tender, which is $5.2 million. And basically what that means is if you sign him to that and another team signs him to a contract and you don't match the contract offer, you get a second round pick.
Okay.
Or a first round tender, which is more like $7 million. I don't know that a right of first refusal tender at $3.5 million will do it for you. I think somebody could come along and say, I'll pay him $6 million a year to be a return guy and a receiver for me in the slot.
I like Turpin.
So Turpin, if I give you the second
round,
Turpin is, it's a good question. Let's look it up. If you give Turpin the second round tender, I don't think anybody signed him away. He's 28. He'll be 29 next August. If you just sign, but this is just the tender. If you sign him to the second round tender, that's 1 year, $5.2 million fully guaranteed. So just one more year you're committing yourself to. Because Nobody's coming in to give a second round pick for Kevontae Turpin, even if they might pay him more than $5.2 million.
Let's do it.
Okay, so you're in on Kevontae Turpin. We're bringing him back at 1 year, $5.2 million.
He's a valuable weapon.
Absolutely. Totally agree with that. Next one here, and really the last one, because Brock Hoffman, Wanya Thomas, guys like that, they're exclusive rights free agents. They've got a ton of control of them. Last one I'm going to throw at you here is, actually, I'll throw one more after this.
Oh.
Carl Lawson. 1 year, $5 million, $3.5 million guaranteed. He's been a really good pass rusher for them off the edge.
It's cheap.
Overall, I mean, in reality, that's cheap if you expect he's going to be able to do it again next year for
that's
you.
That's cheap, especially if you're going to sign Micah, you're going to need to fill out 50 more players on $130 million.
He has 5 sacks this season, 15 quarterback hits. This is, by the way, his fifth NFL season with at least 5 sacks.
All right, yeah.
Staying healthy has just been the biggest thing for him. And he will be 30 enough. Next year.
That's cheap enough.
Okay, so you're on board with keeping Carl Lawson at that price. And then we go to the one that is probably the most difficult for Cowboys fans to potentially say goodbye to, depending on how much money he costs you here. Jordan Lewis. If I say Jordan Lewis, given the season that he's had, is worth 3 years, $24 million. It's $8 million annually. And we're going to say that $15 million of that is fully guaranteed. So you're in for 2 years. For an aging, undersized corner who has bounced back in a big way, though.
He'll be 30 when the season starts. I would... You know what? The only saving grace... Diggs will be back next year? For sure?
I don't know. I don't know that even if he's healthy, he's back next year. They have financial questions at corner.
So the issue is, like, if he's your third corner, I could deal with a 30-year-old third corner.
Yeah, and he'll be third corner meaning
third.
That's
corner.
A starter,
right?
So yeah,
but still, you're theoretically, if you're playing star coverage, theoretically you're on the third wide receiver, which is the worst.
I mean,
wide
although
receiver.
he's played really well this year, and he's been on the top guy a lot.
But like, let's just say if they were putting him on the depth chart, he's third. He's against the third wide receiver.
Kalen Carson did not play as well as you hoped.
No. But I mean, 30-year-old corners, man, that is, you're asking for it.
You might be. Now, we have seen some success. For instance, what Stephon Gilmore gave you at 33 was solid for what he gave you at 33.
Yeah.
And he ended up being a $7 million corner this offseason for Minnesota. So if somebody says, I'll pay him essentially a 2-year deal for $8 million a year, are you willing to jump in on that? Or do you say, There's just too many questions about him breaking down. He's had injury issues recently.
I mean, he has.
He's smaller.
It's not going to get any easier.
He's not super fast.
But the thing is, like, he's now playing with brains.
He's
at the point of his career. He's playing with brains.
Does the locker room aspect matter at all for you when you're considering this? Because he is arguably the leader on defense. Guys look up to him.
Yeah, I think that matters to a new extent.
So 3 for 24, you're basically in for 50. You're in for $15 million guaranteed, which would be 2 seasons.
It's a 2-year deal. I get away with that.
All right. So you're bringing back on this list Oso Odighizuwa, Kevontae Turpin, Carl Lawson, Jordan Lewis. You are saying goodbye to Chauncey Golston and Rico Dowdle.
Yeah.
Which, in reality, you've got to say goodbye to roughly...
You've got to say goodbye to anybody, somebody.
I think the average... I got to go back and look at what it's been in the past. I think on average, the Cowboys let 60% of their free agents go every offseason. So, I mean, reasonable right there. And you've got other guys who are free agents, but those are your big-time contributors. So you're bringing back Lawson, Lewis, Turpin, Odighizuwa, and then figuring out depth at defensive line with Golston gone, and then finding a new starting running back.
From the 817, Chop worries too much about age. I do.
I mean, that's why you went young.
Did. 10 years younger. 9.5. But you
it's
got
10. No, don't 9.5. That's
9 and
10.
A half.
That's 10.
9.5. Yeah, I mean, but
what is she? We figured out. She's a month older than me, or I'm a month older than her. What month was she born?
May.
She was born in May, so she's a month older than me.
Oh man.
You want to date me, Chuck?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, when you hit 30, like history shows that it's just you fall off a cliff.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, you can't.
Especially undersized corners.
You can never know who's not going to. You can never know who's going to be the outlier.
Yep.
So you don't even bother. You just said, look, that's a hard line stance. This is what we're doing. We don't know who's going to be the outlier, so, you know, we're done at this age.
Yeah.
It's tough. It sucks, because sometimes you're going to be wrong. But it's going to even out with sometimes you're going to be right. So, I mean, you can do it either way you want, and just say, I don't care about age, and then you'll be right half the time and wrong half the time. But it's easier. I think it's easier to be wrong and not sign them.
Sure.
At that age.
Yeah. So. No doubt about it.
All right, there's a little bit of Cowboy contracts. Let's get you set up for your weekend with the junk drawer.
Did you know that Benjamin Franklin invented the junk drawer?
I think I said drunk drawer.
I think you did say drunk drawer.
What you drinking? What you thinking, baby?
There you go.
What are you drinking? What are you thinking?
All right, so this is our final junk drawer of 2024, right?
Yeah, this year flew by, dude.
I did.
I was looking back at some of the... I'm trying to get some different clips ready for next week of just like year in review clips that we can play as bumper returns or whatever, just funny clips from throughout the year. And I was looking back at it and I would see something. I was like, that was February? Like that was just barely into 24. And here we are. We've already reset things.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, let's just do like let's see if we can figure out our favorite junk drawer stories of the year, or like our favorite chopping it up type stories of the
sure
year. And like a year in review kind of thing.
It's exactly what it is,
kind of. Yeah. So I shouldn't say this is my favorite, but this is the one that was like the most like, you've got to be kidding me, right? This happened. And this takes us to Algeria. Now Peyton, Algeria is where?
Europe?
No.
Oh. No.
North Africa.
Oh.
I think you could see.
He didn't know Rod Stewart or Mikhail Gorbachev. He's not going to know where Algeria is.
I think Algeria is like right next to, it's on the south side of Gibraltar. I think it's right there. It's very far north.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. So back in, I guess this was back in May of this year, this guy named Omar Amran, one of 9 children, vanished 27 years ago. 27 years ago, he vanished as a 17-year-old. They thought he had died in a civil war between the government and various rebel groups that raged for 10 years in the early 90s and the 2000s.
You are part of a rebel alliance.
Yeah. So early 90s and into the 2000s. So they thought that this guy, Omar Omron, disappeared and died in that Civil War 27 years ago. That turned out to not be the case, Bobby.
How did he die?
He didn't die.
What?
He was, let's see, two football fields away. Two football fields away at a neighbor's house, kidnapped in a hole in the house.
All praise to Allah.
Good God. Good God, Peyton. Jeez.
Bobby set it up.
We pulled that clip from Sean a couple weeks ago when he was reading the Aziz Alshire statement.
Aziz, from Houston?
Yep.
So this guy, this poor guy, was kidnapped living in a sheep's hole in the guy's house, in his living room, covered by a cage and hay.
Why? What was the reason?
According to the news, a dog basically sat there and like pinned him to the spot. But what happened was the guy's brother, the guy who's kidnapped him's brother, got into a fight over inheritance with the guy and tipped off the police that, hey, he's holding somebody captive in the house.
That was a long play.
It's a long play. It was a long play. They got this anonymous person claiming that his brother had been missing for about 30 years, is in the house of one of his neighbors. Wow.
That is wild.
Unbelievable.
So what, did he end up getting reunited with his family?
He's fine. Cool? He's reunited. And then the other guy is like a 61-year-old that he just decided he wanted to kidnap somebody and go full on Buffalo Bill. This is insane.
That is a nutty story. My favorite story from this year, Chop. My favorite junk drawer story from this year.
Oh, by the way, real quick. He would have called out for help and yelled, but he said the guy had put a spell on him.
Well.
And he said he didn't want bad things to happen to his family.
I think I'm seeing why it took so long for him to break out. Doesn't sound like the brightest.
I like it, Poppy.
All right, my favorite story from this year, favorite junk drawer story, was how Elon Musk just sullied the minds and morals of a remote Amazon tribe. You remember this story? This is from June.
Go ahead.
A remote Amazon tribe finally connected to the internet back in, I believe it was May is when they got set up with this. But they got Starlink. Very popular Elon Musk internet, where it's just stable internet in the middle of nowhere. You can use it. So they hooked up this Amazon tribe with internet. Researchers did. And had given this remote Amazon tribe Starlink internet in Brazil.
Oh, I do remember the story now.
And boy, they were angry with Elon Musk about 12 weeks later.
Yeah.
It took 12 weeks, Chop, before these people got hooked on social media and pornography and to a ridiculous extent, to the point that they said, hey, all the men in this tribe that were doing all the hunting and the fishing and the providing for our families, we can't get them off the internet anymore. They're refusing to go out there and like hunter gatherer because they're too worried about, you know, posting their latest photo up on Instagram. And the adult websites were of particular issue for the women, because they were like, these guys are watching things in these videos that now they're like, why don't we try this? There's no telling with their primitive spears and everything else how problematic this became. But they basically, there were a lot of people in the tribe that were like, can you get this the hell away from us? Can you take it out? Like, we don't want the internet anymore because our providers are no longer providing. They're doing duck face Instagram selfies and, you know,
this was amazing.
Liberally applying lubricant.
Yeah, this was amazing. I've gone down, like, so you're talking about, like, these are in, like, parts of the world that are just completely undocumented by man. And a lot of these people, like I went down a Amazon River undocumented tribe or uncontacted tribe.
Dude, some of those uncontacted tribe stories and videos and stuff like that, they make me glad that I'm not there. Because yeah. they don't play around when you show up.
No, no, they don't.
They're ready for war.
They want you. They don't like to be called undocumented tribes anymore. They be called like voluntary isolated people, persons, or whatever.
Sure.
I'm serious. But anyway, I went down this rabbit hole, and like, could you imagine going from like we live in 2024? They're here, and they live in BC. Could you imagine going from that and not gradually getting, you know, computers and cordless phones and then cable TV and then the internet? Could you go from going from that to the internet? You would have no idea how to react.
I mean, whenever the city of Jacksonville comes into modern society from 1995, we'll have a test case in that.
Sure.
Like, we'll see what is it like when they get rid of their cigarette machines and they're playing Color Me Bad in their bars and everything else. I mean, that'll be just a different era completely.
You know about like North Sentinel Island? Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
I think it's off the coast of...
Let's stop with the geography. The Fantex is getting really mad at us with our geography takes.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, you know, North Sentinel Island, like they have, nobody's been there for like 100 years because the last group that got there just got slaughtered. Like, don't come here. Don't come here. Like, this, we want to be left alone. So leave them alone. It's kind of how it works.
214. Hey, Bobby, my 6-year-old nephew just asked me, what's pornography? Can you answer him, please?
It's videos.
Yeah. It's videos. Hmm. Ask about it at your local shady bodega.
One of the other stories is, I wanted to do this just for you, Bobby. The story of Dove Kleiman.
Gosh, this guy sucks.
The question of whether or not he sold his Twitter account. And then the subsequent outing of Dove as a bad person that came right after that. That, you know, they were,
which I told you all along, he was a bad person.
But we didn't know, like, nobody knows who he is still. They think they have uncovered who he is, but they don't fully know. But the fact that this guy created a Twitter profile and then sold it, maybe, again,
he's a loser.
You still
don't
know.
I've known this dude for.
Do you actually know who he is?
Yeah, I do.
Does he flush every single time?
They are loving the Shaw drops right now.
Oh, man, yeah. There's so many in here.
Dude, they absolutely love the Shaw drops right now. I absolutely know old Billy Spikes, as he was referred to in internet message boards 20 years ago.
And Billy Spikes?
That's what his username was, Billy Spikes, and he was a total loser back then and an irritant back then. And I was 16, and I was like, yeah, you're irritating.
Yeah, so I guess the question was, I didn't even think this was possible, that you're a Twitter profile and then you just sell your Twitter.
Oh, dude, that happens a lot, especially with these ones when you get like have you ever seen a Twitter account that's like best fights or bleep around and find it, and it's all these just insane videos or whatever. They will oftentimes they will either sell posts like promo ads of like, wow, listen to this band, or subscribe to this girl's OnlyFans, or they will then sell it to a band or an OnlyFans bot, and then you just have the built-in audience.
I'm thrown. Like, it's, this is, but again, people have the amount of people who have the ability just to find ways to make money. Create a Twitter profile and sell it. Never would have even dawned on me to do that, but I'm not very smart.
I think you're smart. You're intelligent. Yeah. 116. I still believe in
116,
you.
116, that's right, baby.
I've memorized that one. All right. So this was a chop. Was it white and gold or black and blue?
White and gold.
It was white and gold. Now, the lady who posted the image, apparently she was black and blue after her husband this year was convicted of strangling her and attempted murder. So you remember the viral dress? That was it white and gold or black and blue? And that whole discussion that had occurred back in 2015, almost a decade ago. The wild turn that story took was the people who first published that image and made it go viral and appeared on Ellen and all these different talk shows. The husband was convicted in Scottish court this year for strangling his wife, the woman who had posted that beautiful dress. He ended up going to jail. He ended up spending 2 years in jail, or was sentenced to 2 years in jail back in June after being convicted of strangling his wife, admitting to it on the internet. Just a total POS. But it is something where that was the, I had been reminded of that, and then it reminded me of the Yanni and Laurel and everything else. Was it Yanni or Laurel?
Which Yanni, one did you Yanni, say? Right? Yanni or Laurel?
No, it was Yanni.
Was it Yanni?
It was Yanni or Laurel.
I heard Yanni.
I heard Laurel. Laurel.
I think I heard Green Needle.
Well, that one is that's a different one. Where whatever you listen Brainstorm. For, you can hear Brainstorm or Green Needle. People only heard Laurel or Yanny. People only saw White and Gold or Blue and Black. Or the other one was the shoe. Is it mint and gray or pink and white? And apparently I was wrong on the dress and the shoe when it was discovered what the color stacks were. I was right on Laurel.
I think I heard Yanny. I can't remember.
Well, you were wrong.
I don't remember. I know I saw White and Gold on the dress.
Yeah, 100%. That was White and Gold, and they will not be able to convince. You're lying to me if you say it was Black and Blue. What, like you've doctored it.
Now, they say the dress actually is Black and Blue.
No, but they lied. I'm saying they lied. There's no way.
Oh, no, because we've seen photos of the dress.
Yeah, they lied. That's a different dress they showed me a photo of. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't see how there's possible that this dress was anything but White and Gold.
Yeah, it's not even a question.
Right. And what year was that, by the way, Peyton?
Oh, gosh. I was in eighth grade, I think, when that came out. That was 2009, 2010.
The dress?
The dress.
I literally just told you. I was 2015.
That's right. I was seeing Peyton.
That's a smooth way to make it seem like you were seeing
Peyton. No. I was trying to see.
I was finding other Sean drops. A lot of SEC violations in here.
Yeah. 2015. I thought it was way longer than that.
It seems like 10 years ago. To me, anyway.
Oh, God. It's just like 15 to me. All right. Good stuff. That is a little... end of the year in review, junk drawer here on 105.3 The Fan. RJ Choppy. He is Bobby Belt. Join KNC Masterpiece at Buffalo Wild Wings in Fort Worth, right next to Montgomery Plaza, 629 Staten Street today from 10 to 2. Bobby and I will both make an appearance out there. The Cowboys, good at talent acquisition and bad at roster building. It's Sean and RJ, 8 o'clock hour, coming up next on 105.3 The Fan. Let's